There's the little recording thing. Oh, I should do something.
No, you're fine. You go.
Okay, thank you. For those of you who care to join, let's open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Are there any newcomers, any 30 day or under, that would like to introduce? No. Okay. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share. Am I screaming? Grant, I'm looking at you. Am I screaming? Someone tell me. All right, it doesn't matter. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. We've divided it in two. We're just doing step one, the physical allergy. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Jen R. from Ontario, Canada, and Dan M. from Norfolk, Virginia. I will read the first paragraph on page XXVI, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Jen or Dan, do either of you prefer to go first? Okay, Jen, you go first.
Okay, so you may hear some screaming in the background. Those are just my children. They're being taken care of by my husband, so it's okay. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had tried to quit drinking many, many times before getting here. In fact, this was like the last house on the road there. But I remember I had a friend who was like a social drinker, and I went over to her house, and this is when I had tried to stop drinking. Like, I was on the wagon, and I knew very early on, I knew that when I took a drink, all bets were off. I didn't know where that drink was going to take me. And so she asked if I wanted a drink. And I said, well, how much do you have, first of all? And she only had a bottle. So that was not going to work for me because I myself would require the bottle. Like she would have nothing. So I said, no. And I tried to explain to her, and I didn't have any AA language. So I didn't know about the physical allergy, but I tried to explain to her that when I picked up a drink, like I was just going to continue to drink until I passed out or blacked out. And that's just usually the way it happened for me. And she couldn't understand. And she said to me, well, you just listen to your voices. And I said, what voice? And she said, you know, the voice in your head that tells you to stop drinking. And I'm like, I don't have a voice. I've got a frat party in here that's telling me like, drink, 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 drink. Like once I get going, I'm not going to stop. And, you know, it was refreshing when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and read the doctor's opinion that, you know, there was nothing wrong with me. I just had a physical allergy. I had an unusual reaction to this substance, to any alcoholic substances. Okay, well, I can work with that. That's why my girlfriend has a voice that tells her, you know, you're getting a bit dizzy. My husband has a voice. He gets sleepy when he has a wine. And my voice is completely unusual. It usually does not happen to people when they have a drink, but my voice turns into a frat party wanting me to drink more and ensuring that I will. So thanks so much, Amy. And we'll pass it on to Dan.
Thanks, Jen. Hey, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is May 1st, 2016, and my home group, Larchmont 12-Step Study, actually meets Monday night tonight at 8 p.m., so I hope you'll excuse me. I might duck out a few minutes early after I'm finished speaking, of course. I'm not going to leave in the middle of sharing or anything like that, but so I can make it over to my home group as well. I do have a sponsor, and I sponsor them in this program whenever I'm asked to do so. Yeah, this is something that was very true for me, but I was unwilling to accept for a long time. And it was true for me from the first time I took a drink. You know, like my first drink I ever took was a Mike's Hard Lemonade. And, you know, when that hit me, I didn't know it tasted great to me, but also then something started happening and I was like, wow, you know, what is this? You know, whatever it is, whatever this feeling is, I want some more of it, you know, and I'm going to do whatever I got to do to keep feeling this way. And that, for me, that involved drinking a lot more. But you know, of course, the body is of course is wanting as much alcohol as I put in. And my mind, what my mind's doing is, so this is like the, both are abnormal. So my mind's telling me, oh, I'm okay. I'm okay to keep drinking because one of my good friends is the one who got taken in the ambulance to the hospital for alcohol poisoning. Not me. Not wondering about, is my friend okay? But saying, it's okay for me to keep drinking because I'm not the one who, you know, had that happen to him. You know, this is the first time I ever took a drink. So I just give you a good idea of where I'm at as far as my body and mind being abnormal. And it definitely didn't satisfy me to be told that, like, yeah, I mean, you know, something's not right with you. You know, you're defective mentally, or however you want to say it, like something. Dan, what do you got going on, man? Why? It's like the later in the book, it lists like all the way, like, oh, you know, he could stop if he wanted to, but she's such a nice girl and this and that. And it's like, no, none of that's gonna be a good answer for me. But it's like, oh, you mean once I take a drink of alcohol, my body's going to say, oh, have a powerful desire to have as much of that as I can put in my lips, you know, without, you know, and I remember even I would go in the bathroom because I drank beer a lot and I would get this taste of beer in my mouth. And I know y'all, probably most of y'all know I'm talking, just get that taste and it doesn't. And so I had to go in the bathroom and get some Listerine. So, because it wasn't like I was going to stop. That was a sign for me to stop. That was a sign for me to do what I needed to do to keep on going, you know, to keep drinking and just keep it going as long as I could. So that's any discussion of me being an alcoholic that leaves that out, like that the craving, the physical craving, is definitely going to be incomplete. So that's all I got for now. Thanks.
Thank you both. The next reading is on page XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Jen?
Thanks. Thanks, Amy. I forgot. Thanks, Dan, for what you said earlier, because I totally forgot to say that I can't even remember. I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 20th, 2005. My home group is the Port Credit Group, and my sponsor is none other than Amy Kay from this group. So, okay. So now I'll continue on here. My body thinks differently or it reacts differently to things. And my brain reacts very differently to things. And this week it was funny. I was doing some grocery shopping and my husband wanted me to pick up some wine for him. And so I do. And he likes this special type of wine, but I don't like it because in my shopping cart, it doesn't fit in the wine holder. And so I never buy it for him. I always buy something that fits in the wine holder. And I was telling him this and he's like, "That's not the wine holder. That's a coffee holder, a coffee cup holder for people." And I was like, "Oh," but I knew when I told that story here to you, you'd get it, man. Because when we see a coffee cup holder, we're thinking, does a bottle of wine fit in there? Because that's what I need it to do, right? So, my mind just thinks differently than my husband's. And when I first came in and my sponsor started talking about an allergy, I really didn't get it because my brother's like deadly allergic to bees, has to have an EpiPen on him the whole time. And, you know, he tried to stay away from bees. He didn't like taunt them by throwing rocks at the nest. Like he didn't do any of that, but it was almost like I was unable to stay away from alcohol. And I didn't know like what that was. And what it ended up being was this twofold illness, right? Like the obsession of the mind is what would drag me to throw stones at the nest. And the alcoholic allergy would ensure that I continued to keep on drinking. And one of the things that my sponsor said, she was big on working principles. And she said, "Well, you get to work keeping an open mind when we go through these steps." And I said, "Okay, so what do you mean?" Like, because for me, like, that's an open-ended spiritual concept. Like, oh, keep an open mind. Everybody wants to say, "Hey, keep an open mind." But what does that look like? Like, what do I have to do? And she gave me a really good suggestion, which was, everything that you're unsure of, or everything you think you know, which is probably the best thing, everything you think you know, why don't you look it up in the dictionary and see what the actual definition of it is? Because I had all kinds of ideas of what things meant and how things should look. And by keeping an open mind and allowing myself to, question whether or not I thought that or whether or not it was the truth and looking things up, it just that like one exercise that like blew my mind. Like it turns out I don't know a lot of stuff, and I thought I was really smart and an English major in university and I got this, and I didn't get it. I can totally understand and appreciate people who say like, there's nobody too dumb to get this program, but there's a lot of people who are too smart. I think I was definitely one of those people that was almost too smart, almost too smart to get this program. Anyways, thanks, Dan. On to you.
All right. Yeah, it's so funny that you were just talking about the definitions and like looking stuff up. And so I have something written in the margins of my book, which means that it's something that my sponsor either had written in his book or that he told me about that I wrote it down. And I also have this whole paragraph highlighted and underlined. So that for whatever that's worth. So it usually means to me it's pretty important for my recovery. So I have written here, allergy equals abnormal reaction. Because like you were saying, like the whole thing with the bee sting and the EpiPen and all that, that's what I think of. I don't think of like, it's not safe for me to have alcohol in any form at all. And by the way, I absolutely did not want to hear that when I came to AA. First of all, I didn't want to come in here either. I was forced to come by a judge who heard my story of drinking on a Tuesday night that had gotten me put in the drunk tank and decided that it would be good for me to go to 90 AA meetings. And one of those was simple actions, and I used to show up and get my slip signed. And actually, this was that when y'all were doing this step, this was one of the ones I actually could understand some of it, because I was like, oh, I kind of get some of it. Like, I was like, some of this sounds a little familiar. And I was like, I don't know if that's a good thing, and I'm not going to tell anyone, but some of it sounds very familiar. When it got to the later steps, I was kind of just had no idea what the heck was going on, because I hadn't been through them yet. Nor did I want to at the time. But yeah, the allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. I was like, all right, well, I'm not an allergic type then. You know, maybe I get a little crazy sometimes and I got some trouble. I had to come in here, but that doesn't mean I'm not one of the, you know, I was definitely someone who was unwilling to admit that he was an alcoholic. And so I wanted to be the average temperate drinker for sure. But, you know, all I had to do was, you know, if I could have had a out of body experience or something, and like in Doctor Strange, where they get pushed out of their body and they're kind of looking at themselves, whatever they're doing, that whole deal, or anything like that. If I could have just looked at myself, how I was drinking, I probably would have been like, damn, I don't think there's anything average or temperate about that. You know, there's really not. But I just couldn't really see the truth in that. And the other part I wouldn't say I like, but that was very true for me. And especially before I took the steps, was that problems piling up on me and becoming astonishingly difficult to solve. Because the way I operate is that I'll drink and I'll have, either I will have an intention to black out or something, or I'll just be like, yeah, I'm going to get drunk, but I'm not going to get too great. And then what inevitably happens is I have no control over that. So then I'm waking up in the morning and I'm like checking to try and find out, do I have any money left? Where's my car? Wait, what's going on? And so those are all problems that are piling up on me, in addition to the problem that I have that I won't admit, that my drinking's out of control. So that's like that just brings me back every time I hear that, to just having all these problems. Then, you know, then stuff just starts to happen. Like I get pulled over for merging on the lanes on 264 that have double white lines, which people do that all the time. But of course, I'm the one, you know, I got all these other problems, then I'm the one getting pulled over and I'm already broke. So that I just think of all that stuff and how it was just I had no solution to any of it, especially not the alcohol, the drinking part. Because I wasn't willing to listen to what anyone had to say yet. So that's it.
Thanks, Dan. We are going to continue on XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Jen?
Wow, there's so much in that paragraph. So, you know, I like the idea of normal. You know, normal is a relative term. If I'm in a crack den and I'm not doing crack, I'm not normal, you know? And that's how it was. I surrounded myself. I normalized my drinking. I surrounded myself with people who I felt like drank the way I did. And in fact, I was kind of distrustful of people who didn't drink the way I did. You know, I know for me, I had to, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a really weird period where I hadn't yet quite let go of those people, but I hadn't yet grabbed on to the AA people because I wasn't really sure. I could admit I had a problem, and that problem was drinking. If I could just stop the drinking, I would be fine. And I never understood that the drinking was the solution. And when my sponsor told me that, I drank because life was so unmanageable for me. I had to drink just to eat, just to get some ease and ease from the pain and discomfort. At first, I didn't quite see it, to be quite honest with you. In fact, I had to stay sober in order to see the real unmanageability in my life. Like when I was 6 months sober, my life was terrible. I felt depressed, anxious, like my life seemed to get worse instead of better when I stopped drinking. And that's when the penny dropped. So I'm happy for that experience that like I was able to experience that for me, when I stopped drinking, my life gets harder. And she was really kind. I had a very funny sponsor. Mostly she was funny at my expense, but she used to say that reality was painful because I was only visiting, you know, and that basically that, you know, as I continue on and as I work the steps, things are going to get better. And she had been where I had been, and I believed her. So AA then, and the people around me in Alcoholics Anonymous became my normal life. And, now that is my normal, this is it. Like, this is my normal life. And I got to tell you when I came, oh, well, I'll tell you later. Okay. Thanks, Dan, on to you.
All right. So yeah, the first line here, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. When I've heard that, and I actually didn't hear it out of the book first, because at first, like I said, I was just showing up to meetings. I wasn't doing much book reading with anybody. And then after a while, like I started feeling a little pain. So I asked someone to be my sponsor, read a little bit of the book. But at first I just heard people sharing and saying this, and I thought they were just saying it. I didn't know it was out of the book. So I was like, well, yeah, of course I like the effect. I'm like, you know, what are y'all talking about? I mean, who the heck doesn't like the effect? Like, you know, if it was so horrible, then what? But then I think of, you know, maybe, you know, like that a girl I used to date, and this was a year into the sobriety for me. I remember we went out for her birthday one night, and she had a drink, and I think she might have had another one, and she just made her all like sleepy and loopy or whatever. She's just like, yeah, no, I've had enough. Like, that's it for me. And then this, it wasn't the same, you know, it wasn't what I get out of it. It wasn't like the relief that I experience of not having to care about anything when I'm drinking. Cause when I'm not drinking, when I'm dry, I care too much about everything, way too much. And it's the point that it's just ridiculous. And so I really enjoy that effect of just being free to do and say whatever it is that I think that I should be doing or saying, there's not even a lot of thinking involved, really. It's just whatever is going on in the head. That's what's coming out. And that's just the way it is. And saying the whole part about not differentiating the true from the false, that was me. And that my alcoholic life was absolutely the only normal one. I thought AA was very not normal. When I got in, you know, when I showed up, I was like, even though my dad's been in the program, he's been sober since I was a little kid, and he's been in AA. So I had been around to some meetings when I was young. But to me, it was just some guys sitting around trading Drunkalog stories and sipping coffee. And that was about all I knew about it. I didn't know much about the steps or anything. And it just didn't seem like, I was like, I don't need this, you know, like, no, my drinking, my, you know, that life is normal to me. But yet I would have times where I'd be drinking and I'd be at parties. This wasn't where I was at. I was at parties with my friends in college and I'd just be sitting there feeling totally alone and drunk as I could be. And just feeling like isolated, like nobody really cared about me. And just, I remember two of these times. And then one time a friend came up, was like, damn, you okay? What's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't know. And that didn't seem normal to me. And I was like, well, what should I do? I think I should keep drinking because that'll probably fix whatever's going on here. And so that's what I did. But yeah, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. Absolutely. Unless I was drunk, I was usually one to all three of those at any given moment. And it made me very angry to see people taking drinks with impunity and not getting the sort of trouble I was getting in, having to go to AA. I just didn't think that was fair. You know, I was like, well, my buddy Jacob was there with me at the Dirty Buffalo that night on Tuesday. Why didn't he get, you know, why didn't the cops get him? You know, why do I have to be the one who has to, you know, put up with this nonsense? You know, I had all kinds of crazy ideas like that. And just couldn't get it, really. And, so the last part here where it's talking about the phenomenon of craving developing, passed through the stage of a spree, emerging remorseful, firm resolution not to drink again, repeating over and over, have those numbered 1 through 5, because that's like the count. It's like, all right, I'm going to, you know, phenomenon of craving, I'm going to drink, I'm going to keep drinking, I'm going to however much I have, and I'm going to just have to go make some little mumbled apologies. Certainly no true amends, but just enough to get me either to where I can borrow money again or to where I can not have someone on my ass. And then I don't know if I ever had a firmer resolution not to drink again. I would tell my parents I was going to go back to meeting and stuff, but that was just to get me out of trouble. And just repeating it over and over. And yeah, unless I can experience that, there's no hope of recovery for me unless there's some had to change about the way I about really everything that I was doing. And you know, the way that happened for me is just about working 12 steps. So and psychic change sounds a little weird to me. It was just like, I don't think the same way I used to. That's all it is. I don't think the same way I used to about alcohol, about many other things in my life, and just about situations and people and all sorts of things. And that's just happened through working the steps and getting that relationship from higher power. So that's it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Jen. Our next reading is on page XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Jen?
Yeah, I remember feeling really bummed out when I read that, because there was part of me that thought that if I could get like super spiritual, you know, like really connected, do some hardcore meditation, that I could probably safely drink. Like God would have removed the obsession, so I could probably have a drink, you know? And that was sort of my back door. And there was also a little bit of me thinking, did I jump the gun? I was 25 when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it's interesting because my sponsor, like knowing me, and I'm so lucky because I felt very comfortable with her. I'd have these open conversations with her and she'd be like, you know, I've heard some of the crap you've done, like drinking. I can't imagine someone who is not an alcoholic wanting to ever choose to drink again after doing the stuff you've done. And it's like, oh, really? She's like, yeah. And I was like, but I was 25. I'm young. She's like, you're not that young. You're 25. Oh, okay. So, I mean, it was good for me to hear that. And it's good for me. Like, I have to be reminded. And it's why I have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, because AA has given me such a full life. Like, my world was so small when I came into AA. I had nobody. You know what? I had really fed up people around me. My mom was fed up. My friends didn't really want to talk to me. I was a loose cannon. I was completely, just not a reliable person. I don't know. Like, I just thought maybe someday if I get really well spiritually, I could have a drink. The longer I've stayed here, the more it's sort of, and I have to tell you, when I came here, I was like, this is doom, gloom, ginger ale, and Jesus from now on. You know, I looked around the rooms, everyone was nearly dead. They were all, you know, in my head, like in their 90s. And they were probably like 42, like my age now, but it, you know, at 25, anybody who's like 30 is over the hill. So, I remember thinking, oh my God, I can't stay here. I can tell you that it's been the very best thing that I've ever done. And if there was an easier, softer way, if there was, I would have found it, because I tried everything before coming here. And I've tried a lot of stuff in here too. I've tried not going to AA meetings. I've tried not having home groups. I've tried not having sponsors. I've tried not helping other people. And, you know, I can tell you where that got me, which was it got me nowhere. And it got me in a lot of pain really quickly. So I'm lucky I haven't, you know, throughout all that, I'm lucky I didn't have to pick up a drink. But anyways, yeah, that's my spiel, is that I just know that no matter what happens, I cannot pick up a drink. It will never be safe for me. And I will always have the allergy. So no matter how spiritually well I get, my body will always be this allergic. And in fact, it's probably more allergic than it was 15, 17 years ago. Yeah. All right. That, Dan, way go.
All right. Yeah. I did not want to be set apart at all. That was the whole point of me drinking, which was to fit in and have a good time and hang out with everybody. And I didn't want to be differentiated or set apart as a distinct entity. That's the last thing I ever wanted. Unfortunately, my drinking said otherwise, and I would kind of have some fallings out, and people wouldn't want to be around, or at least wouldn't want to drink with me if some of the, you know, just because of how... just whatever happened, you know. And I don't, honestly, I could wish I could tell you more about it, but a lot of it is not stuff I remember. It's some of it is stuff I've been told about after the fact. So, but you know, I do remember this one time I was over at a party, and everyone was started getting a circle and was singing that song. Or that song was playing, the Come On Eileen song. It's like, come on, Eileen. Da, da, da. And everyone's standing in a circle, arms around each other, kicking their feet in and out. I'm like, yes, this is what I want. Every night of drinking should be like this, and camaraderie and all that good, you know. And I went around, I was trying to find that again for a while, but I really couldn't. And the other part I didn't want to think about at the time, because it would have told me something was up with my drinking, was that me and my friend were hoarding all the alcohol in the corner for ourselves, to make sure we had enough to last the whole night, you know. So we had our own little stockpile over there. But you know, I don't want to think about it. I want to think about, like, oh yeah, everyone's having a great time. You know, don't set me apart. Don't make me different. You know, I'm like everybody else. You know, I can be good or whatever. And it's not really about that. It's just about that once I put alcohol in, I don't know what's gonna come out of my mouth or what I'm gonna do or anything. And I know I'm gonna want a lot more. You know, I know it's not just going to be, and even if there's been I can remember a couple of times where I had maybe one or two, and it was about kind of fitting in with a certain crowd, but man, that really set off the craving. I couldn't wait till I got back away from them and I could really drink how I wanted to. I was like, all right, I'll stick around for a little while with these guys, but after this, I'm going and I'm drinking because I can't deal with this any longer. And that's the craving for me. And yeah, here it is right here. The other part I didn't want to hear. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I mean, I was like, you mean you're not going to tell me how to, you know, use the magic words or whatever and be able to control and enjoy it or whatever I want to do or have enough to where I feel good, but I don't have to get in trouble or I don't have to have people, you know, hate my guts or whatever else. You know, that'd be pretty nice, but it says, no, man, you got to have entire abstinence. You got to stop. Like, that's the only way it's going to work. And I'm like, but I can't, you know, at first it was like, I don't want to. And then later on it was like, well, I don't think I can, you know, now I do kind of want to, but now it's like, I don't know if it's possible. And I'm a pretty low effort kind of guy, so I can't say I tried everything in the book. So one thing I did try was just going, showing up at a couple meetings and working all day and just coming back to my parents' house where I lived and just shutting myself in the room and watching Netflix and just not really interacting with anyone, or if I did, just kind of snap it at anybody. And that kept me sober for almost 2 months. And then I found a good excuse for me to go out and take a drink again. And I'll tell you, I was totally miserable during that whole time as well. So that I wouldn't suggest that as a treatment, certainly. And the only thing that I've found that has ever had any effect on my alcoholism as far as helping me stay sober has been these 12 steps, this book, and you know, this program, and being sponsored by someone who's worked this stuff and has some experience with what I've gone through but did something different, you know, did some work to change that. So, but yeah, I don't know of any permanent eradication. I'm always going to be an alcoholic, you know, I'm okay with that. I don't know if I'll, you know, I can accept now. I used to get really pissed off when people say they were grateful alcoholics. I can accept that now. I don't know if I'll be the one to say that, but I can practice acceptance and say that's who I am today. I know that, and I know what I've got to do about it, which is show up in here. So thanks.
Thanks, Dan. The next reading is on page 152. This is actually the last reading. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. Jen?
There's that doom, gloom, ginger ale, and Jesus. If you told me that I would experience the same thing sober, like that AA would do for me what alcohol did for me, I wouldn't have believed it. There's no way. There's no way. I remember one time I was having a drink. Well, I was having lots of drinks and with some friends who weren't alcoholics. And they said something like, oh, well, we should get out of here. We're kind of bored. And I said, oh, no, you just keep drinking. It'll get better. And that's how I was, like, that's how I dealt with all my problems. I just kept drinking and hoping that it would just get better. And sometimes it did, you know, sometimes I had a few laughs, all my drinking times weren't all terrible. But that was my solution to boredom, to stress, to happiness, to any kind of emotion. Because I don't deal well with real strong emotions, you know, and I'm one of those people that fluctuate wildly between up here where only the dogs can hear me and down here lower than whale shit. And that's sort of where I was, you know, I was either up or down. And my solution to that was drinking, you know, it numbed me out, relaxed. You know, the thing is I wanted to be happy and to be able to control my drinking. But the truth is, that whenever I was happy, I was not controlling my drinking. And whenever I was controlling my drinking, I was not happy. And AA has given me a life today. Like if you told me at 25, and I mean, my life isn't like, you know, spectacular in the sense that, well, I remember my sponsor asking me, what do you want to, you know, what do you want in life? And I said, well, I want to marry somebody rich who will, you know, take away my student debt and, you know, and hopefully, you know, have lots of dogs. And that was like the best thing that I could think of at the time. And, you know, today, well, none of that's true. You know, I didn't marry somebody rich. I'm with someone who's, you know, good man. And we have three children and it's chaotic and crazy. And it didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. And we only have one dog, you know, right now, but I'm really working on a second. And then, you know, we are in debt because we have a mortgage and we owe money on our car and, you know, and I'm freer than I've ever been. How cool is that? Right? That's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how the steps have changed how I think, not what I think, but how I think. You know, I get to be free under pressure and difficulty. And even though I have this allergy, I have a design for living that works in rough going. Like I always say that if I ever picked up a drink, it wouldn't be because I forgot I was an alcoholic. I would never forget I was an alcoholic, but I would pick up a drink because the pain of today of living is way more painful than 17 years ago. See, because I can't really feel, I can't feel the pain of 17 years. The pain I feel today though is real. So it's really important that I'm working in this program because if I don't, my brain goes back to thinking the old way of like my conditioned responses. So, you know, I can tell you it's not, oh, one last thing, boredom. That was, this guy took me through the book of probably when I was about 5 years sober. And I've heard it said in AA before too, but I'd not heard it before this. I told him that I was bored. And he said, because you're boring. What do you do? And I said, well, I want a boyfriend. And he goes, why? So you can be less boring. Like get something to do. Your boyfriend's not going to make you less boring. And I was like, ooh, you know, that's not nice. But it was true. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to discover what I like to do. See, I was run by my addiction for so long. I didn't have interest. Some people have interests that they go back to. I didn't have that, but I stuck around the rooms. And I was able to develop, you know, I had no idea. Like I like to paint and I'm not bad at it. You know, I like to cook and I love to dog train. You know, I would never ever had known these things about me or developed those aspects of me unless I was able to stay sober and to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's a little bit of the gifts, you know, it doesn't stop at step one, part one, and keep coming to all the meetings. And I hope everyone gets a sponsor and, you know, because good sponsorship's been instrumental to my recovery. Okay. With that, I'll pass you on, Dan.
Yeah. This, I love that we jump forward to this part in the book because this is exactly what I thought, you know, even when I did finally say, you know, all right, I got to do this, man. You know, I've been beat down now, you know, I know there's no way other way out for me than to come drag myself back to AA. And I'd been coming in and out for 2 years at that point and trying to beat it with my half-hearted attempts and other plans. But I was like, yeah, man, everyone, it's so boring, you know, and everyone's, you know, really, I was fortunate in that I was able to like some guys kind of got with me and told me some things that I didn't want to hear at the time. But it wasn't about what I should do. They were telling me stuff about their recovery and their, what they had, how their drinking was. And I was like, man, that sounds kind of like me. And I was like, no, you know, but these guys were, and women too, you know, the first young person that I was introduced to in AA was a young woman who went to the Downtown Young and Sober meeting. And I was like, oh, there's a meeting that it's for, and I didn't know any of that existed. And so then I started going to that. And what I found is that, you know, and I never thought this would be true, you know, and my sponsor, he took me to, so I love going to shows at the Norva. For those of y'all that don't know, David knows what I'm talking about. It's a concert venue here in Norfolk. It's been here a long time. And I used to love to get show, and I would go pregame down there on Granby Street and get lit up before the show and just be, you know, just stumbling all around in the show and not remember half of it and all this and that. And I was like, all right, well, this is it. You know, no more shows, no more any of this. I thought my life was going to be over and none of that. And I was like, but the pain of my alcoholic life and just the way I was drinking and just burn everything to the ground was so great. And I had a little bit of willingness to come in here and humble myself and ask the guy for help, call him drunk at 3 a.m. and say, I don't know what I'm doing, man, please help me. And start going through the steps. And this dude took me to a show at the Norva, and it was Trampled by Turtles and The Devil Makes Three. And it was in May. It was the same month I got sober in 2016. It was like the end of the month. So I had a few weeks or whatever. And I was real nervous about going. I was like, I don't know, man. And he was like, no, come on, it'll be fun, man. And he's like, come on. And I was like, all right. And it was great, man. I had a great time. You know, I won't say I didn't think about drinking at all, but you know, I wasn't there alone. I was there with, and I saw like a bunch of people from the program. I saw like 5 people I knew from the meetings, and I was like, oh, we all come do this. You know, we can still have fun. And you know, I kind of understand why he did that now, just to show me like, hey, man, you still do the things you used to enjoy doing. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be drunk to enjoy it. And I was like, I never knew that. And that was a revelation for me. And I was like, wow, so that's kind of what I was talking about. He was like, you know, hey, Fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous will give you a lot of that stuff, you know, but to do that, I had to do what these people were doing. You know, I had to put in the work, and so I can enjoy some of those benefits and those the great gifts of sobriety. And you know, it's I got to rid myself of some of the fears, or at least ask my higher power to kind of relieve me of some of these things, burdens, so I can get on with the business of helping other people in this program and pass this message along and work these steps with other guys. Believe it or not, I wouldn't have said it at the time, but these have been the most satisfactory years of my existence. I have to say that. And I had no illusions of the steps working. I was like, it's not going to work. I really don't think it's going to work. And I think my life's going to suck and be boring. But like I said, just had nothing else left. Nothing else left. The morning after the night of my last drink, I was walking around like a zombie. I was something out of The Walking Dead. I had no more ideas left about how I could do anything about my drinking or my life. So at that point, I was willing to do whatever. And it's turned out much better than I could have hoped for. You know, I have many friends in this program and relationship and many wonderful things and relationships and with my family and all this. It never would have been possible. Never would have been possible without AA, without these steps, without all y'all helping me along the way. So, you know, it's crazy how like my attitude, I guess that's what the psychic change is, you know, like that's like reading this now. I remember thinking about this stuff and I was like, no, that'll never happen. And damn, a lot of it hasn't happened this way. So, you know, it's funny how it works, but I'm just along for the ride. And I'm not driving the train conductor anymore. I'm thankful for that. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you both. We are going to pass the virtual Seventh Tradition basket. The Seventh Tradition says that we are self-supporting. I do not have the Seventh Tradition in front of me. Everybody knows what it means. I'm sorry, I'm choking. That's for the Seventh Tradition. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. Oh, here it is. The Seventh Tradition states, Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I can't really tell what's going on. Does anybody have their hand up? I've like done something weird with, oh, here. Now I'm fixed on the screen. I don't see any hands up.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Okay.
Everybody does have the ability to unmute if you okay. do want to contribute an announcement. But it occurred to me, and I'm unprepared to share it, but there is all throughout the month of February, Al Jay from the Buckingham Group is putting a workshop on Sunday afternoons. I believe it's 2 p.m. to 3:15 p.m. I've got all the information. I can text it to you, or if you're interested, let me know. But it's gonna be I think three more Sundays. But I went last Sunday, and he's got speakers from all over the country talking about. They did the first three steps at the last meeting. Talk a little bit about AA history and individual speakers talking about the steps. Pretty cool little workshop geared toward people new to AA. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're a little shy, email info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to ask the group to please thank our speakers, Dan M. and Jen R. again. Y'all were great. Thanks to all who participated. We will unmute everyone after the Lord's Prayer and give everyone a chance to say thank you. And David, will you read the last paragraphs on page 164, please?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Alcoholic David, a vision for you, page 164 in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. We have a nice way of closing. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name.
Thy
kingdom come, thy will be done
on earth
as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation,
but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Dan. Thank
y'all
you
both so great.
Much. Thank you guys so much.
Awesome. We're great.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you
both.
Thank you,
Jen. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you
very much.
Jen, nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you too.
You know.
Night, tomorrow night
at 8 o'clock in Beamsville. We're online.